Money FM 89.3, best of the breakfast huddle.
Couple of top headlines coming out this week. We, of course, started with that crackdown on China's big tech companies. Singapore's economy also showing signs of recovery. There's really a lot to get through this week.
Yeah, there certainly is, and lots of really big headlines.
Let's find out more from Nicholas Fang, Managing Director, Black Dot, and Director for Security and Global Affairs, Singapore Institute of International Affairs. Nicholas, good morning.
Good morning, guys. Always happy to talk to you guys because every time we talk, Man United seems to have been the night before. So it's always a good omen to be speaking with you guys.
Amen, brother. Oh, you beat me to it. Nicholas, we've got a lot to get through. One of the highlights out of Singapore, of course, has to be Singapore's economy and the first quarter GDP. Now, before we get into that, I mean, obviously, a lot of it is around the sentiment of how vaccines have been rolled out. But earlier this week, there was a report of a foreign worker, who got COVID after receiving the two shots of the vaccine. I mean, you know, from your perspective and from where you're standing, what's the recovery effort been and the assurances that have been given to the public? I mean, you know, this whole push that, hey, you should still get the vaccine. There is an investigation going on here.
So I think, you know, I was speaking to some friends in the medical sector about this, and to be honest, they weren't particularly concerned. They said we always knew that there would be a risk of reinfection. Of course, as we look at COVID itself, we've seen new variants come out. And while there is some data to show that the vaccines that we're getting and that have been approved thus far are effective against a number of the new strains, as this thing, you know, sort of evolves, it's really an arms race between the vaccine makers and the virus as it mutates over time. So there's always a risk that we could be reinfected. At the same point, we don't necessarily know how long the vaccine's efficacy will last. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it might become like the flu jab where you kind of need one every year whenever the flu season rolls around eventually. So I don't think you should be too alarmed. The important thing to note is that if we look at, again, the data, it does show that the vaccines are 94-95% effective, if you're talking about the Pfizer, BioNTech, and the Moderna vaccines, against, you know, you catching the virus. So I think for that sort of herd immunity sense, it's really a good thing for all of us to go out and get it. I got mine 2 days ago,
the first
dose. So, you know, I am old enough to qualify now.
And there's that.
Yeah, we weren't going to mention it. You did it for us, Nick. Thank you very much for that. let's just stick with the vaccine subject, though. So I was having a conversation with a friend yesterday who said that they turned up to be vaccinated this week, also in the same bracket as you and I in terms of age. And he said, actually, I turned away because the vaccine they wanted to give me was Moderna. And he actually wanted to have a Pfizer vaccine. So this just highlights that people are expressing an opinion about where they want to have their vaccines and which vaccine they want to have, which was another big story this week. How significant was this move, do you think?
It was a bit strange because the health ministry in Singapore made it very clear from the start that we wouldn't be offered a choice in that sense. You couldn't pick which type of vaccine to get. You show up and you get whatever was there. But with this news that you're referencing, the fact that certain centres have been identified as offering the Moderna vaccine, and then by elimination, the rest of them that were not mentioned were offered the Pfizer vaccine. And it was quite clear that each centre would only offer one type of vaccine. So you could kind of guess, you know, if you're following the news, which centres you could choose to get whichever vaccine. Moderna doesn't seem to be too popular. I can't quite figure out why, because efficacy-wise, it's a difference of 1 percentage point. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it could be a familiarity because Pfizer has been out for a long time. A lot of people have gotten it. So people are like, okay, no, let's just do that. So I have had friends, and there is a way, in a sense, to be able to gauge, even if you didn't know specifically which centres offered which vaccine. The time difference between the first and second dose for Pfizer-BioNTech is 21 days, 3 weeks. And for Moderna, it's actually 28 days, so it's a week longer. So if you are booking the dates and you see the spacing automatically generated, you know, showing either 3 weeks or 4 weeks, you can kind of get a sense of which one you're likely to be getting. So that's just a little tip. But, you know, the government position from the start was that you wouldn't be able to pick and choose which vaccine you got.
I turned into my father when I saw the news. Well, I give you free, you still want to choose.
Exactly.
But all of this really is why we see Singapore's economy showing its first turnaround since the COVID-19 pandemic. GDP for the first quarter growing 0.2%. That reverses the 2.4% contraction last quarter. MAS also keeping its exchange rate policy settings unchanged. This is good reason for us to feel optimistic going into the rest of this year, isn't it?
I think definitely, and of course, it's worth bearing in mind that we're coming off. Last year was a pretty low base. Of course, you know, the first quarter of last year was when we started to see a little bit of the concerns and fear around this virus that was coming in. You know, the news that was emerging, that was spreading around the world. We hadn't entered the circuit breaker yet in Singapore. So I think most economists are expecting for an even bigger year-on-year jump in the second quarter, because in last year, obviously, we had circuit breaker and all the impact that had on the economy. But I think one thing to bear in mind is that even as we see some hopeful signs of recovery, I don't think it's fear-mongering to bear in mind that the global economic impact of COVID-19 is very, very severe. I look around, you know, the marketplace in Singapore and the economy, and there still seems to be a fair amount of optimism. People are still spending and going out, and things look a little bit brighter. But a lot of this has been propped up by the budgetary measures that the government put in place, you know, ever since last year. And we all know that this cannot last forever. So I think it's still worthwhile keeping in mind that we haven't emerged from the dark times just yet. Things may be all right, but when some of the measures like the job support scheme and things like that start to be lifted, which inevitably they must, we should brace ourselves for a little bit of tough times still to come.
Yeah. Keep with the slightly economic theme, but shift a bit more towards business. On Monday of this week, China's central bank announced that Ant Group will restructure as a financial holding company because authorities halted its IPO last year, whilst Alibaba received $2.8 billion in fines for violating anti-monopoly rules, with a rather interesting response, which was to say, thank you for slapping us on the wrist. But what I think is also really interesting here is whether or not this sends a message to the rest of the region, and in particular Southeast Asia. We've got a really burgeoning fintech scene here in Singapore, don't we? What is the warning that we can learn from this experience that Ant Group has had?
That's another interesting area, because I think we've spoken about this before, and the concerns that, you know, some of these financial regulatory measures being put in place might have a political slant to it. They all seem to come into play after Jack Ma, of course, being very outspoken and who he is, spoke out against some of these sort of regulatory measures in the past. And then suddenly, you know, Ant Financial's IPO was blocked and things like that. So, I mean, you're saying that for Alibaba to come out and thank the authorities for a fine, I think it was because it was just a fine. And in comparison to Ant Financial, they are the sort of sister company, the impact could have been quite worse. You know, they could have been forced, I think what the authorities in China are calling rectification, but basically restructuring that would be imposed on them. And Alibaba sort of managed to dodge that bullet, which I guess is why they are quite grateful. In terms of signaling, I think it's very much an extension of President Xi Jinping's sort of drive against corruption and within government, and sort of extending into the economic space, and definitely into the burgeoning fintech technology sector. But it seems largely focused on, you know, internal China domestic markets right now. I guess the cautionary tale is for, you know, tech companies within this region looking to do business in China, that there is a sort of a cautionary tale to be learned as to the fortunes of Mr. Jack Ma and his companies. As we all know, we haven't heard from Mr. Ma for quite a few months now. We keep hearing reassurances that he's still doing okay from people who are close to him. But I guess, you know, how things pan out for him and Alibaba and Ant will really sort of set the benchmark for what we can expect if any of us want to operate in China.
Nicholas, just a super quick one, and I'm going to try and combine a few issues here. It's also on the back of that first quarter growth of 0.2%. Less problems coming out of Singapore, more good news, like, you know, Grab, a Singapore company, having that SPAC merger in the United States. Citigroup exiting 13 international consumer banking markets, but Singapore is one of the bigger ones, as they say, so they're going to focus here in Singapore, Singapore, Hong Kong, London, and United Arab Emirates, that is. So this makes us that gateway for Southeast Asia. Perhaps we could look forward to seeing even larger growth by this time next year.
No, I agree. I think it was a little bit pessimistic of me to be a bit doom and gloomish earlier. Obviously, great news.
No, for
Grab, getting that SPAC listing. I think people are still wondering about the whole SPAC process and whether it actually circumvents, you know, certain regulatory scrutiny and things like that. But kudos to Grab for what would likely be the largest SPAC offering, you know, valuing the company at almost $40 billion. But the Citigroup, the interesting link segue to the Citigroup story is that obviously Citi did really well in the first quarter of the year on the back of its work in the SPAC sector and other investment areas. But you're right, it does underline the fact that because it's staying, you know, keeping its consumer banking operations in only a few key markets, Singapore being one among them, it does actually bode well for the post-pandemic new normal, economic new normal that we hopefully will emerge into. Singapore has always been very good at positioning itself to emerge a little bit ahead of the curve from any crisis. And it looks like we're laying the foundations for what could potentially be a good recovery, whether this year or next, from COVID-19. So fingers crossed.
All righty. We've been speaking with Nicholas Fung, Managing Director, Black Dot, and Director for Security and Global Affairs, Singapore Institute of International Affairs. Nicholas, as always, appreciate your time. Take care and stay safe.
Take care, guys.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download the SPH radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.